Uncertainty isn't just a challenge, it's a call to adapt. At Tagoras, we help organizations navigate disruption with clarity and confidence. Whether it's making smarter decisions about your portfolio, understanding shifting market dynamics, or identifying new opportunities for growth, we bring deep experience in strategy, market assessment, and lifelong learning. If you're looking to build a more resilient, responsive learning business, we're here to help. Learn more at tagoras.com/clarity.
Self-reflection is an important tool for learners and an important activity for learning business leaders.
I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast. We used to start the Leading Learning Podcast by saying, if you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place.
And there was some nice snazzy drum music to go
along with it. We did have some different music back then.
Now, we no longer say that at the start of each episode, but it's still true. We created and continue to create this podcast for current learning business leaders and emerging learning business leaders.
And thanks to a recent book, we got to thinking about what it means to be a learning business leader, and that's what we want to focus on in this episode.
Now, the book that got us thinking about that is the most recent publication from Dr. Will Tallheimer. It was published earlier this year, 2024, and it's called The CEO's Guide to Training, E-Learning, and Work, Empowering Learning for a Competitive Advantage.
And we are, of course, big fans of Dr. Will Tallheimer's work. As listeners, longtime listeners here will recognize, he's been on the podcast multiple times. He has spoken at some of our events in the past, most recently the 2024 Learning Business Summit, which we'll be holding again in 2025. And, you know, his focus is on corporate learning and development, workplace learning, but many of the nuggets from his work absolutely apply to learning businesses as well.
And this most recent publication, The CEO's Guide, is 50 chapters.
50.
50. But they're very short. Each one is usually just a couple of pages or maybe up to 4 or 5 pages. But again, very focused, very targeted chapters.
Practically Zen koans, I think, for the for the L&D world, and it's written, as the title suggests, for CEOs. But chapter 43 is actually entitled "Your Learning Leader,"
and there are 11 bullet points near the beginning that are introduced with this text. Here's what a great organizational learning leader should be, and then it follows with those points. But we thought, wow, okay, let's see what Will has to say. And then we thought what we can do is go through those points, kind of gloss them with that learning business lens on them, putting that focus on them.
That sounds like a great structure for a podcast episode. So that's exactly what we're going to do here. So I will name the first, or I will articulate the first of those 11 bullets. And that one says, this learning leader is tasked with creating learning that leads to benefits for the organization aligned with business needs.
And I think that's very true for learning business leaders as well. The learning business is going to be really focused on how the learning products and services in its portfolio feed into the mission of the learning business. Now, if the learning business is embedded within a larger organization, as is the case with trade and professional associations often, then you are going to want to make sure that there is that alignment between that learning function and that learning portfolio with the larger organizational strategy. And then, of course, if the learning business is freestanding, then it absolutely still has to make sure that what you're providing aligns with the business needs, the business realities of the overall organization.
Right. And of course, we kind of encapsulate those business goals and needs under those banners of reach, revenue, and impact. We won't go into detail about those here because we've talked about them so many times, but that is the business focus of a learning business.
And then the second bullet in Dr. Will Tallheimer's text is that great organizational learning leaders should be tasked with creating learning that benefits employees and other key stakeholders, including the beneficiaries of those learning programs, employees, coworkers, customers, investors, families, communities, society, and the environs.
that's a tall order. You can tell why these are leaders who are creating this learning, because they're thinking at that level about what they're creating. And of course, the same should be true in a learning business. And in the case of a learning business, we're not employee focused like learning and development departments are, or at least not directly. We may be reaching the employees of the companies that are in the field or industry that our learning business serves. It's just not about the employees within our own organization. And then, of course, most of those other stakeholders are going to apply in some way.
Right. And we've talked about creating a learning culture within a learning business. And I think this point from Will speaks to that very directly, this idea that there's sort of a ripple effect that you can have impact directly on the learners, but then it spreads beyond them. It's also spreads to who those learners touch, their families, their coworkers, and then ultimately that spreads out into society and, as he puts it, the environs as well.
That's right. And I think our people are all about the environs because you're really reaching a lot with what you're doing as a learning business leader and what you're creating and the extent to which you're helping to facilitate learning across a field or industry. Now let's look at the third of these 11 bullet points. And this one is that learning leader is tasked with enabling improved work performance beyond learning interventions using performance activation and learning in the workflow approaches.
And again, I think that this is very applicable to learning businesses, even if it might take a bit of a leap to make the connection. When you are providing learning and development for employees within your organization, you have a ton of opportunities for, as he calls it, performance activation and learning in the workflow. It's a little bit harder for learning businesses, but I think this is a very important point for learning businesses to remember that it isn't always about a course or a conference or a seminar, that there are other things that you can be doing that really will support the goals of making sure that the people you serve not only are hearing about important content and ideas, but are applying them.
And to me, this goes straight to the heart of the maxim that we cite so often, that learning is a process, not an event. So yes, we're all doing courses, we're doing conferences, we're doing webinars. Those are part of our portfolio. But you know, our goal isn't to put people through a course or a webinar or a conference. Our goal is for them to actually change their behavior out in life and out in work, and to do things differently and to do things better, and to always keep that in mind. You know, what's happening beyond that course, beyond that webinar, beyond that conference? How are we designing to support that?
And we can design to support that even within the context of some of those containers like right. Courses and conferences. We can have job aids. We can have templates that are going to really help make that application piece easier and make it possible for the learner to really apply that. So again, I think we totally agree with Will here around, you know, thinking beyond pure or only learning interventions and thinking about performance and learning in the workflow. Now, the next bullet is that a great learning leader should be wholly responsible for hiring staff, not subjected to the request, quote, can you find a place for Joe in training?
Right. And I don't know exactly how much this happens in our world, but I'm sure it does happen some, where it's just like, you know, we're going to stick so-and-so over here because there happens to be an open box, and you, director of education or VP of learning, please take this person and put them in the role, even though they may or may not have, you know, the background that you really want a high-performing learning business staff to have.
Now, the next one is that a great learning leader should be a member of your senior team and specifically not housed under your human resources unit.
And this mostly would not be part of our world because we're not talking about, you know, internal employee training. So it wouldn't really be a human resources function. But I think it is often true that the leader of the learning business, if, for instance, they're housed within, say, a trade or professional association, is not necessarily a member of the senior team, in spite of the fact that the organization's mission probably says that education is, you know, one of its primary goals, and in spite of the fact that members are probably saying that that's one of the major reasons that they join the organization, and in spite of the fact that education is often generating significant revenue for the organization.
Now, of course, if you're a learning leader in this position where you're not considered a member of the senior team, it can be a bit of a uphill battle to advocate for yourself. But as you were just pointing out there, Jeff, it can be worth making it clear to the organization what a fundamental role learning plays in the mission of the organization. And in the case of associations, that's why members are often coming to you. So this can be a place to potentially advocate for yourself and make sure that the learning focus isn't lost and that it is represented on that senior leadership team.
Right. And of course, this will vary from learning business to learning business. If you are a freestanding, you know, learning business, that is your sole focus as a business, then this isn't going to be as true, but it will be true in some instances.
At Tagoras, we partner with professional and trade associations, continuing education units, training firms, and other learning businesses to help them to understand market realities and potential, to connect better with existing customers and find new ones, and to make smart investment decisions around product development and portfolio management. Drawing on our expertise in lifelong learning, market assessment, and strategy formulation, we can help you achieve greater reach, revenue, and impact. Learn more at tagoras.com/more.
Now, the next bullet is that this learning leader is a person who has spent a serious amount of time working in learning and development, not someone just passing through. And I don't know, I feel like this has evolved a lot over the years. And again, I'm thinking primarily of learning businesses that might be housed within associations, as opposed to sort of the more freestanding, say a commercial training firm, or even more of an academic-based learning business. I think it used to be much more the case that people ended up in some of those types of learning businesses kind of accidentally, just like people often end up in associations accidentally. You'll then end up in the education department, and you may or may not have that L&D background. I think that is changing, but it is still an issue out there.
And I think that this, again, offers an opportunity for potential area to focus on or to work on. If you are someone who doesn't necessarily come to leading a learning business with a lot of experience in learning science, that's the kind of thing that you can fill in. There are a ton of resources to help you get up to speed there and to become someone who is knowledgeable and isn't just there by happenstance. And so I think this is an area to make sure that you and your team really do have that grounding in what it means to deliver effective learning and different techniques and approaches for that.
And I think the thing that we would add here that isn't as much a part of Dr. Will Tallheimer's world is the business experience and the business acumen as well, because these are, you know, revenue driving, either standalone businesses where, you know, revenue is the focus of the learning business, or they are a revenue creator within a larger business. And you have to have that sort of business acumen, that business background coming into it. So coming from a pure L&D background, where maybe you haven't had that business experience, can be a deficit for you in that position.
As a side note, I believe Will is both a PhD and has an MBA.
I believe he is. He is a very accomplished guy.
So he does bring both the learning aspect, and he went back and filled in some of the business side of things with his MBA.
Right, right.
So the seventh point that Will raises is that a learning leader should be a person with a deep understanding of learning and learning to performance practices. So I think as we were discussing the sixth point, we began to get into this, that you really do need to have some knowledge of what goes into effective learning, and not just knowledge, but understanding, as he says here, and also this idea of learning to performance. So again, it's not just about presenting content, no matter how elegantly you do that. It really is about how do you make sure that that content has some impact on the performance of the learner.
And I think this is the type of thing that the person in this position has to stay on top of, you know, because this is evolving, and people like Will are doing, you know, a lot of the work that is evolving this and increasing our understanding. And you can't just come into a position, you know, with whatever background you do have in learning and performance and expect what you know to remain true. I mean, it's true just about any, you know, job or career on these days, but you have to stay on top of it.
Right. One reason we are big fans of Will is because he does do precisely that work of helping to translate what we know from science and from studies that have been conducted rigorously. And then what does that actually mean for how we design learning? And so taking advantage of people like Will, taking advantage of other people who are doing that translation work is very important in helping you as a learning leader really have that deep understanding.
And this sort of points to the next bullet, which is that this learning leader needs to be a person with knowledge and affection. I like that affection part of it for the learning and performance sciences, a person who knows how to balance practical priorities, those might be business priorities in our world, certainly, with evidence-based wisdom.
Right. And so the evidence-based is important. And I like that he pairs that with wisdom, that this really is a place where we can make sure that we are taking approaches that really are going to help us move the needle in whatever the field or profession with the learners that we're focused on. But I also appreciate this idea that he's acknowledging that it's a balance, right? Because I think we all know that some of the best practices for effective learning are a little bit impractical in terms of, you know, if you were going to be quizzing yourself every other day on everything that you've learned, which would, you know, force some retrieval practice, that might not be practical. You might have to do a little bit less often or a subset of what you're learning. But again, balancing that as much as possible and leveraging those techniques whenever you can.
So the next one is that this learning leader should be a person responsible for voicing and enabling the ethical and social dimensions of employee learning. And again, here, you know, Will is mainly focused on corporate L&D, so that employee focus. I think we can probably, you know, we can drop employee and just say, I would say, of learning for whatever audience you're serving. And I feel like oftentimes this kind of ethical and social dimension doesn't really get realized. I mean, we're impacting entire fields and industries with the education and training we're providing, and it is going to have some ethical and social aspects to it almost by default. I don't think those tend to get forefronted a lot.
And then the 10th point that Will raises is that a learning leader should be a person responsible for supporting managers and informal learning leaders throughout your organization. So this really does speak to the role of leading and leading a team. And this would apply to learning business leaders as well, to the extent that you are not a team of one. Even if you are a team of one, because he mentions informal learning leaders, it might be that outside the purview of, quote, education or, quote, professional development, there might be others in the organization. You want to support their understanding of effective learning practices, and you want to be a resource to them. You want to help recruit them so that, again, there's that culture of learning that you're creating within your learning business and then more broadly in the learners that you serve.
Definitely. And then the next one of these, and this is our final one here, number 11, this learning leader is a person with knowledge of the functional and cultural milieu, I like that he uses milieu there, in which your organization operates, whether in small or large business, in the nonprofit world, or in government, military, education, etc.
So I think this speaks to this idea that, yes, you need to be knowledgeable in the field of learning and adult education. We added to that the need to be conversant in business practices. And then here, I think Will is saying you need a little bit of domain expertise. So whatever the focus is for your learning business, make sure that you understand it. You know, maybe you're not an expert coming out of that field or profession per se, but you need to understand it well enough to understand the implications then for how you can help learners in those fields or professions actually achieve learning goals.
And I think some of this comes down to, you know, how and how well you work with your subject matter experts and creating the different types of learning experiences you provide. It also comes down to decisions you make about how much in-house subject matter expertise do you hire for? Do you actually, you know, have on staff? And I increasingly see organizations that do have some substantial subject matter expertise in-house that's helping to inform what they're doing from a learning standpoint.
So those are the 11 points that Will saw fit to include in his guide for CEOs. Jeff, what else comes to mind? What would you add to this list?
You know, I'm not sure I would add anything to the list. It's probably more about kind of how to use a list like this and how to use a source like Dr. Will Talheimer, because we've noted a number of times that he's coming more from that corporate learning and development world. And I think, you know, a couple things may happen with the audience that we serve. One is that, you know, you see something's coming from the corporate L&D world and you just say, well, that's not me. you know, so you're not going to take advantage of it. And I hope we've, you know, illustrated here that there's a lot in this list that does apply to the world that we work in. So you have to translate it. And I think that's the other thing is some people are receptive to, a lot of people are receptive to, you know, these kinds of sources and looking at a list like this, but don't necessarily make as much effort as they should to translate it and figure out, okay, yes, you know, here Will is saying employees. I mean, it's easy to translate that into a customer or a member, but what does that really mean? How does it change that bullet? And then how does it apply within our organization once we do that? And then making that effort to translate and translate well.
I agree that there's a lot wrapped up in that idea of translation, and in my mind ties to reflection, which we know is an important tool in learning. So we would encourage you to reflect on this list, maybe do some additional translation work beyond what Jeff and I have offered in the course of this conversation, and to think, what else would you add? What would you put on this list that might not be reflected in any of these bullets, but that you see as being really fundamental to your success as a learning business leader?
And we might just kind of cap this off by, you know, noting that Will does make the point that chief learning officers or whatever that top, you know, learning leader position is titled, do need support from the top of the organization, from the CEO and from the other senior leaders who hopefully are peers of that learning leader. And that includes, you know, support to spend on their own development and in hiring outside help when needed, you know, consultants or coaches or whatever the case might be, and support that helps to make sure that learning really is a focus of the organization's overall strategy.
So I think another place for you, dear listener, to reflect a little is around, do you have the support that you need in your organization? And if not, how can you advocate for that support?
Self-reflection is an important tool for learners and an important activity for learning business leaders. We're grateful to Will Talheimer for including a succinct list of what a great learning leader should be in his book, The CEO's Guide to Training, E-Learning, and Work, which was the basis for our conversation.
At leadinglearning.com/episode421, you'll find show notes, a transcript, and options for subscribing to the podcast. If you haven't yet, please, please do subscribe.
And we'd be grateful if you would take a minute to rate us on Apple Podcast or wherever you listen, especially if you enjoy the show. Salise and I personally appreciate reviews and ratings, and they help the podcast show up when others search for content on leading a learning business.
And please spread the word about Leading Learning. You can do that in a one-on-one exchange, and you can do it through social media. In the show notes at leadinglearning.com/episode421, you'll find links to connect with us on LinkedIn, X, and Facebook.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.